Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
It's not like I go out saying, I need to break a rule. That's not my mindset. My mindset is there are certain principles I work with. And I learned this from this deceased author. His name is Jim Camp, the world's most feared negotiator. The guy was brilliant. That a principle overrides a tactic. Tactics are fine, but these principles are more important. Don't go outside these principles. And that's how it is in business. So I have the belief, and I think more people should be doing this, that if you have a product that can really help people, it doesn't matter what the product is or who you're selling it to, but you know for a fact that this product is going to benefit somebody. And my way of thinking is a principle of doing business. I think it's my moral and ethical duty to at least let them know that product exists every day.
Everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. It is October 5th, and on the show today, a different kind of guest. First-time guest. His name is Ben Settle. He's a very, very successful entrepreneur. He used to have a podcast, in fact, called The Antipreneur. And you can hear me recommend that show to you several times over the next hour. BenSettle.com is his website. If at any point in the conversation you want to investigate what he does or get involved, Ben was recommended to me not as a guest, but as a resource. And just a couple months later, I have found that Ben's work, Ben's words, had a major, major impact on me. I started reading some of his stuff. I started listening to his podcast. And I said, you know what? That's a cool guy. These are the kinds of people that I want to be talking to on this show. You know, folks, like some people are just cool. Some people aren't. Most people aren't. Most people are like, ooh, you know what I like to do? I switch back and forth between CNN and Fox News because I feel like it helps me develop like a more well-rounded viewpoint about the issues that are affecting me and my family. But you're not going to hear people like that on this show because that ain't cool. But Ben is, and I'm really, really excited about this conversation. Ben's specialty is email marketing copywriting. He's definitely a leader educating people in that discipline. But that's only going to be a small portion of this conversation. We are really going to focus on the psychological obstacles that stop entrepreneurs, young and old, potential entrepreneurs, from achieving. And just a couple of quick announcements before we get started. I would really like it if you would support us through Patreon. I set a goal a while back. It was $100 per content item. We're about 60% of the way to that goal. That's sweet, but we still have some ways to go, and that's where you come in. There's a link to do it in the show notes for this episode, and I am finding I'm spending more time and paying more attention to what kinds of special and delightful little things I can put in there exclusively for patrons and, of course, AV Club members. Those are the people who support us with a regular monthly contribution, and you get access to literally hundreds of hours. You know how sometimes people just say hundreds when they mean like six? This is like literally hundreds, maybe 400 hours of additional content. Some of our best stuff is in there. In this bonus content section. So that's two ways to support the show. The most recent addition for patrons and AV Club members is a series called Philosothon. It is a conversation that I had back in June of 2015. Remember those days? With a former guest named Matthias von Gutenberg. He did a show with me for our Agorism series about Bitcoin. So last summer, I had him in the studio, and I said, look, I'm getting really into meditation, and I want to talk to you about some of the Eastern philosophy behind these meditation practices that I've been reading and trying out. What happened instead was this fascinating, expansive dialogue about his whole philosophical development and us going back and forth and sharing different types of information, and it went on for 3 hours. It's a stimulating and at times challenging conversation. And it just got kind of put off in a someday maybe folder. And I recently uncovered it and I listened to it and I told him, I said, look, I want to do something with this. It really doesn't work as a podcast just because of the format, but I want to make it available to the people who support the show. And I can definitely have you back on in the future to talk about something else. And he said, fine. He thought that was great. He was glad that I uncovered it. Also, at the very, very top of the homepage at schoolsucksproject.com, there is a transcript of my recent conversation with Christina Hoff Summers. Some of you were displeased with the audio quality on Christina's side in that podcast. You were right to be displeased, but I'm happy to announce that a remedy is available. I want to thank a listener named Jay Myrick, who did the transcript for me. I took a couple hours to edit it, and then I posted it. It was such a satisfying project. Speaking of transcripts, for those of you who are interested, there's a website called nostateeducation.com. It is a landing page for Tom Wood's new ebook, Education Without the State. An entire chapter of this book is Tom's interview with me on his show back in, I think, end of 2014, beginning of 2015. And I'm just flattered to be included. I'm using it to win arguments, actually, with other libertarians. People come and they say, Brett, I think you're wrong about this. And I say, yeah, that kind of sounds like something that someone who's never been the whole focus of a chapter in a Tom Woods book would say. NoStateEducation.com, again, is the website. Support Tom. He's doing great work. All right, everybody, here's my conversation with Ben Settle. I'm going to wind it back just a couple minutes into our pre-show because there's just a few important details there that factor into the rest of the conversation. All right, everybody, thanks for listening and take care. I really like the idea, as long as it was okay with you, just keeping the conversation more in the realm of the, you know, the psychological factors and obstacles.
No problem. Those are my favorite things anyway. Awesome. It's always my favorite stuff. So
cool. Did you have any questions about my show or the format or my audience or anything like that before we get started?
Just the audience. These are younger people.
Well, it's actually kind of diverse. We have a lot of high school and college students, but they're probably only about a fifth of the total audience. Most of the people in my audience are actually parents who do like home education or unschooling, a lot of autodidactic adults.
Okay.
People that I'm really, really trying to reach right now are college or recently out of college, packing up their dorm room and going home to live with their parents, and they don't know what they want to do, and they feel that they've been cheated. And, you know, this whole world of entrepreneurial possibility exists, and they just don't know about it because they've spent, you know, 15,000 hours in public school where it wasn't mentioned, and then another four or six years in college where it probably also wasn't mentioned. Lots of dependence on authority, lack of direction. I've been trying to do a lot of pep talks for the recent graduates or the people who are still in college. And you know, a lot of my content lately has also been talking about this awful like social chaos that's going on in college with all this political correctness and all that.
Okay. So this should be right up my alley then, this
sweet.
Whole thing.
And we are not, and there's no restrictions on language and, you know, which I know you'll be happy about. So don't feel like you have to hold back about anything. Please just feel at home like you would on your own show. Maybe it's hard for me anyway when I do interviews to feel completely comfortable and in my own element. So
I've awesome. Never have a problem with that.
I didn't think you did.
I'm going to go into your fridge and make myself a drink and a sandwich. It's all good. Don't worry about it.
All right. So let's get started. I'm very pleased to welcome for the first time to School Sucks podcast, Ben Settle. Hey, Ben.
Hey, how are you, Brett?
I'm excellent, and I'm really happy to have you. As I was saying before we started, I just encountered your work about 6 weeks ago for the first time. It was recommended to me in a mastermind group by a friend who swore by what you do, and I'll just talk a little bit about what that is. You have become a leader in the email marketing how-to industry. Is that fair to say?
I think I'm this sound like humble or anything. I've given myself the title the world leader in email copywriting education because I think I teach it as well, if not better, than anybody else.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a little bit about that today, but like I said to you, I really want to focus on the psychology not just behind copywriting or email marketing, but the obstacles to self-promotion and entrepreneurship more generally. So we're going to talk about things like asserting and promoting yourself, believing your words have value, not being afraid to break the rules of the industry you're in. And a frustrating subject that I would like to get to, too, if we have time, why people struggle with authenticity and what we can actually do about it. And I think there's a lot of young potential entrepreneurs in my audience that would really benefit from that.
All right.
So like I said, I first heard your name in my mastermind group from my friend Nathan Frazier. He interviewed you for his show, Narcopreneur. And he said, get on this guy's email list. And I said, I'm not getting on somebody's email list. That was my attitude. I'm on like two email lists, and you and Tom Woods, who I think you've also done a
yes.
show with, right?
Yes.
And I open them and I read them, and I'm feeling like I've been missing out. So I started listening to any interviews that I could find, and I found myself, for reasons that we're going to discuss today, motivated for the first time after 7 years of doing this show and 3 years of doing this show as my primary source of income, interested in pursuing email marketing. And I started writing emails. I started picking topics for sequences and just writing them out. So it was you who changed my attitude really about writing generally. And you did it very, very quickly. Before we get into all that, I want to talk about you. I've heard you say that experts should always have something to say about their area of expertise. And then you send emails every day, which means you're consistent with that. I'm interested in people's path to expertise. So I wanted to hear your story. We could go all the way back to your attitude about schooling, but I'd like you to contrast that to like your self-education, the experiences or influences that you had that took you from a struggling young multi-level marketer to where you are today.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because the story I'm going to tell, I think, is going to be very relevant to at least the listeners you and I were talking about before the show, the ones you really want to nail down on some of these things that we've been talking about. Because I was in that spot. I was in the exact, in fact, when you were telling me, I was asking about your audience. I'm like sitting there nodding my head saying that was me, you know, back in 1998. So technology has changed since then, but nothing else has changed a lot back. This is back when Fred Flintstone still roamed the earth. Okay. I get that.
Right.
But it doesn't mean none of the principles have changed. So it was about 2 nights before I was graduating college. And even then, I knew I did not want to like have a boss for the rest of my life. I hate authority. I just want to do my own thing. I don't like having to edit myself and all that. I just knew I wanted to be my own business owner. I had no plan for it. Okay, I knew nothing about anything. My major was radio, TV. Okay, I was about to go live at my mom's house and, you know, not know what the hell I was going to be doing. I didn't live in a big city or anything. Well, 2 nights before I was about to graduate, this infomercial came on by this guy named Kevin Trudeau. Now, Kevin Trudeau is serving 10 years of prison right now, from what I understand.
Yes,
so I'm not,
yes.
I'm not saying to follow his path here, but he was great at infomercials. He really was. And this is before he got all, like, he wasn't really shady back then with his infomercials. He put out some good stuff, like Mega Memory, for example. It's a great product. It helped me get all A's, actually, when I used to only get C's. So it's not like that I'm not downing the guy or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, you might want to take a grain of salt, like as far as looking him up. Okay. So anyway, he did this infomercial and it was called Financial Freedom, which was like catnip for me at that time, right? Because I'm thinking that's what I want. I don't want to have to do this job stuff and all that. And so I watched the infomercial. I had no idea he was selling multi-level marketing, but that's what it ended up being. I paid like $30 for the information kit and all that. And they did a great job of selling me into their MLM. Now, he didn't own that MLM. He was just a distributor. He was using infomercials to build his downline from a marketing point of view. I actually find that pretty fascinating. I didn't think of it back then as fascinating because I didn't know then what I know now. But I paid the $800, whatever it was, of money I didn't have, put on a credit card, didn't even have a job or anything lined up, and I joined the company. And for the next 2 years, I proceeded to suck out loud at it. I am the introvert's introvert. Okay. I don't want to talk to people. I don't want to go up to everyone within 3 feet and ask them, do they keep their options open for ways to make money, which is kind of how they taught you to do stuff back then. I didn't want to go to these idiotic rallies and all this with all the fake enthusiasm and all that. I just didn't like – I was not into it, but I didn't know what else to do, so I stuck with it. I just was never good at it. I only sponsored maybe a few people over a couple of years, wasted a lot of money, got a ton of debt, so much debt and so much financial problems that I ended up having to – I couldn't actually get a real house at the time. I was married at the time. And at the time, her and I were like, what are we going to do? We got to live somewhere. Well, I only have enough money to we could go live in this office for like $200 a month, or we could go live with my mom. If you know, that wasn't going to happen.
Right,
for any reason. So we ended up moving into this office and for $200 a month. It was an office conjoined to the landlord's office. Now, the landlord didn't want anyone living there. So obviously, we conveniently left that out of the equation. And this guy would just come through the door any time of the day to use the bathroom, which was on our side of the office. It was just a sink and a toilet. There's no shower or anything. And this is where we lived and had to pretend like we weren't living there. And every morning, we'd get up at like 4 a.m., put all the blankets away on the floor and all that. There's no bed or anything. And go down the street to play basketball at the local gym. And then take a shower there and then come in around 7 as if we're just starting off all crisp, you know, start the day. Did that for about 5 months or something like that. And during that time, still trying to do the MLM thing. I was going around town passing out cassette tapes. This is back when there was cassette tapes. So some people listening to this may not even know what that is. Okay, right, but a cassette tape.
Yeah.
This is when it was cassette tapes. And I was – they're recruiting tapes for MLM. And I was just getting yelled at and laughed at, you know. People feeling sorry for you. I mean, it was absolutely just – I look back and I just feel like a dork even forever doing it. This – again, this went on long enough. For one night, it was like 3 a.m. in the morning and I was just depressed, dude. I was like, this is – you know, I was buying into all the hype and everything of the company because that's what they do. And I just wasn't working for me. And I just said – I literally just prayed. I said, God, you obviously don't want me doing this. Okay. And then what do you – what I don't know what to do. So I went into the other room because I couldn't sleep. There's two rooms in this office and a little bookshelf, and there was some books. The one good thing this MLM company did, which is no longer in business anywhere, but in case one was wondering, is they would send you a book of the month, which sometimes they'd send you some pretty good books. Well, I just happened to pick one of the books off the shelf that I had read once or twice before because it intrigued me, and it's called The 7 Lost Secrets of Success by this guy named Joe Vitale. Joe Vitale is a very well-known copywriter, very respected copywriter and author. He wrote this book. It wasn't like his book. He was writing it about this old school advertising guy named Bruce Barton.
Yes.
Yeah. And not a lot of people know who he is. He's the second B in the giant BBDO worldwide advertising company, huge company. He was an advisor to presidents. I think he advised Coolidge, for example, because he was active in everything from the early to mid-1990s. That was his time.
He hated FDR.
I mean, this dude is pro-business to the max. He thought Roosevelt was like evil. And I'm not a fan of Roosevelt either, so I agree with Bruce Barton.
Indeed, right.
And I suspect you and your audience are with me on this.
We are.
Yeah. So that's why I thought they would love this story. So he just, you know, and he was an enemy of socialism and all that. He was also like a reverend, and all that, or he's the son of a reverend. And he thought business would bring in the second coming of Jesus. Like that's what he really, like he was so into business. That's like where his mind was. He wrote several business books and, you know, it was just, you know, the guy was all over the place. He was advising people on Wall Street, running for Congress. He was, pioneered a lot of stuff that, it's funny because he did things that back then were, like today's liberals think that they've like invented these concepts, but he was actually doing that stuff. He was sticking up for people, you know, who weren't white, for example, before it became fashionable by Hollywood. You know what I mean? Like he was anti-war, at least, you know, not in pointless wars, I should say, before it was popular. He wrote this whole thing about World War I and why it was such a mistake to get into it. And, you know, back then that took balls to take those positions. You know what I mean? So anyway, so he was definitely a mover and shaker.
Hey, didn't he write a book just before we move on? I want to insert this because it's interesting and it's quite creative. We actually talked a lot on my show in the past about the O in BBDO, which was Alex Osborne, who did a lot of great work on imagination and creativity. But Barton had this book, didn't he, where he imagined Jesus as like a successful kind of alpha businessman in the 20th century.
Yes, it's called The Man Nobody Knows, and I actually have not been able to find it, but it's out there somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did the book Nobody Knows, which is about the Bible, and he was always these – and he had some interesting like business takes on this stuff. Like it was interesting. Like there are ways to use some of like the story about Joseph in Egypt to help invest in the stock market very accurately. And I don't know, just interesting stuff like that. I don't know. But I've only been able to read bits and pieces. But the point is, this guy was like a mover and shaker in the advertising world especially. And in 1919, right after World War I, this, and this is the story I wrote. I just kind of thumbed to it that day, like that night, that morning, whatever time it was, 3 a.m. Right. I thumbed to it, and I'll never forget it because it changed the way I looked at everything so profoundly. Even though I'd read it before, it just didn't hit me until then. This out-of-work sales manager came to him for advice. And this guy had, and this guy was just like out of work. And he's like, help me find a job, Bruce. And apparently he told Bruce Barton that he had a specialty. He was known for writing sales letters specifically. And Bruce Barton takes him to the window and he says, look at all those businesses out there. All those buildings are full of businesses. You're supposed to be good at writing sales letters. Why don't you write a letter to one of them on selling them on hiring you? And I was like, wait a minute. You know, I was like that just hit me out of nowhere. Like, I didn't even know what a sales letter was or what copywriting was or anything like that. Right. I was like, wait, you can get paid writing letters? Like, I'm like the Grinch, man. I just want to sit on my hill and complain about the who's down there and about all the stuff they're doing. And I don't have to deal with the who's unless I want to.
Sure.
And I was like, a sales letter allowed me to do that. Like, I don't have to talk to people. I can just be my introverted self. And so I got into it. I got on Google that night and I started researching sales letters and copywriting. And certain names kept popping up. Now, I don't know how much your audience is familiar with these names, but if they're into this, these are names they're going to want to get to know. Guys like Dan Kennedy and Gary Halbert, for example, and Jay Abraham. These are like really high-level guys. And I started reading their stuff and, you know, it was like a rabbit hole ever since. I've never gotten out of this industry, but that's how I got started.
Yeah. So you still consider yourself a student in many ways, but it also seems like you break a lot of rules.
Yeah. And it really, when it comes to email marketing, especially, like any rule you hear, my way of thinking, there are no rules. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to be like water. You have to be able to flow in and flow out and be formless and kind of go with everything. For example, so when I was getting started in all this copywriting stuff, and I was, you know, I started my own email list and all this back in like 2002, 2003. Nobody would sell in their emails. Oh, you can't do that. You have to build a relationship first and only sell once in a while when you have something you really want to sell to them. And I bought into this. And I can't even tell you how many hundreds of thousands of dollars I probably lost as a result. I started learning specifically from this guy named Matt Fury. MattFury.com. The guy he's not really active that much anymore and all this stuff.
Like a fitness guy, Matt Fury? Ah, yeah, sure, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I owe this guy everything. I don't even know him, but I feel like I just owe him everything because his way of doing email was so different and so inspiring. He would sell every day. He would actually write in his daily emails to people, look, this is a first draft email. I don't even bother editing these things. I'm going to make some sales. Now, here's my product. Now I'm off in China. I'm going to go get massages and ride elephants all day, whatever he does. And I was like, that is the lifestyle I want. And I spent many years, like 7-8 years after that, trying to figure out how he did it. Not that there was anything really complicated about it. That's the secret is there's no secret. It's very simple. I started learning how he did email because it's a very – like you talk about breaking rules. At the time, I mean nowadays since I've been out teaching this stuff and everything, it's not quite as – taboo, but trust me, he was the real pioneer in all this. And I learned so much from him. And, you know, the foundation of everything I do is based on what I learned from him. Now I've just kind of branched off and built on, expanded it for my own self, really, because I wanted to like master this to that point. You know, I know I teach it. I'm constantly experimenting and learning new things. And it's not like I go out saying I need to break a rule. That's not my mindset. My mindset is there are certain principles I work with. Because in my opinion, and I learned this from this deceased author, his name is Jim Camp, the world's most feared negotiator. The guy was brilliant. That a principle overrides a tactic. And yeah, he learned that as a military pilot in Vietnam. That's what they taught you. Like, you know, tactics are fine, but these principles are more important. Don't go outside these principles. And that's how it is in business. So, for example, I have many principles I go by. Like I have the belief, and I think more people should be doing this, that if you have a product that can really help people, and it's really going to help somebody, it doesn't matter what the product is or who you're selling it to, but you know for a fact that this product is going to benefit somebody. And my way of thinking is a principle of doing business. I think it's my moral and ethical duty to at least let them know that product exists every day.
And if I can just stop you right there, this is what really changed everything for me. This idea of a duty to the people who have chosen to follow you. If you have something valuable to give them, you have to tell them about it. And you, I think part of that too is that it's really motivating to continue to find new ways to create value. I was educated in marketing. My major, I graduated a couple years after you. My major was communications, which was also worthless. And marketing was a big part of it. And I was working in education while I was still in school. And then shortly after I graduated, I quit and I took a job at a ski resort in a marketing role because I felt like I should be using this $50,000 worthless degree. And then I just found myself immersed in what I felt was such horseshit. And it was so embarrassing to be doing this every day. But it was all tactics, you know, and it felt really dishonest. It felt really, really yucky. And I had from that point on, and I mean, I'm still, you know, shaking this off today, a very sales averse, self-promotion averse attitude from that schooling and that early professional experience in marketing.
Yeah, and you're not alone on that. A lot of people, but see, I never really had the problem that I was afraid to promote. I just thought I wasn't supposed to. You know what I mean? So that's it was very liberating when I thought I can sell every day. Why else are you doing? You know, if you think, I'll tell you this: email, and this is something I learned from Matt Fury. Okay, I really agree with him on this. That email is nothing but talk radio. And what does talk radio do? Talk radio entertains you, gives you information that you're interested in, entertains you at the same time. But at the end of every segment, there's a commercial. Right? That's where they get paid. That's how the bills are paid. And those commercials are always very direct response commercials. They're very billions of dollars are made in these commercials. They're so perfectly done.
Right.
That's all email is. You're giving them a segment of your own show in text, you know, and then you're gonna ask them to buy something. And whether they do or not, they're gonna come back for more if they like your personality and you know how to talk to them. And there's no difference.
So I really like this idea. And like I said, that was really impactful. I think I first heard it on you're doing this interview on something called Solo Pro Radio. And you mentioned this is the biggest mistake, that people aren't trying to make sales. They have a duty to sell if they have something to sell. And I think that, you know, if you're really passionate about something, you have a duty to yourself first to cultivate knowledge and turn that into something that's useful for somebody else, you know? So I've been doing what I've done for 7 years. I used to make a lot of money providing what I called counterfeit educational services. So I was a teacher for many, many years. And then I worked as a private tutor. So I did like academic tutoring where I'd show up at somebody's house and say, you've got a C, so you're defective. Let's turn it into a B. Let's turn it into an A. I did the SAT, which does have some value, but the purpose of me SAT tutoring was just to get kids into college, which I started to not believe in that either. I used to say, and this is before I had any exposure to free market economics, so maybe like 2005, 2006, before I had read any of those guys, I used to say to myself, I'd be driving around in my new car saying, I'm being overpaid. You know, this doesn't have the value that is being attached to it. And, you know, eventually I started this business doing exclusively SAT tutoring, and I felt like I had found ways to build all this opportunity in it for like useful skills beyond just taking the SAT to get these two numbers. So I felt better about that. I was making my weekly salary on a Saturday, which was terrific. There was a lot of freedom in that. And then as I transitioned into doing this podcasting as a career, everything is free all of a sudden, you know? So that's been a problem that I've been working on. I think there's negative self-talk. I think there's I make money doing this and I pay all my bills and I save a little, but there's opportunities that I'm missing. I think negative self-talk is a huge part of it. There's obstacles in the way of doing better with it.
Well, negative self-talk is really what keeps everybody back, in my opinion, at the end of the day. I mean, if people, you know, and this is, we all go through it. It's not a big deal. We're all programmed by, like you were saying, the public school system to basically be a good little drone. Don't color outside the lines. Don't think for yourself. Just do as we say. Basically like having a job, you know,
right.
It's exactly.
Sure.
And there's some of us, and I'm guessing you and me and the people who listen to your show, because they have the same thing that there's like, they probably feel like there's something not right with all that, and they don't know what it is, and they can't pinpoint. Just like I could never pinpoint it. But it's like that. I'll tell you, one of my all-time favorite movie, and I know this is cliche, especially probably in your world, but it's true, is The Matrix, the first Matrix movie.
Yeah.
Because it's exactly what it is. Once you take that freaking red pill, you can't go back to that. You can't. You cannot do it. You could try to get yourself reinserted back into it by betraying all your friends and all your ideals, but that ain't going to work either. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. You move pretty fast away from that world. And I've even like looked back at the time where I had to like do some kind of application for something financial or related to a place to live, or even I remember in 2013 I was trying to pick up, I tried to pick up some work in Connecticut doing this innovative new SAT tutoring course, and I'm like, God, you know, I really, when I started the School Sucks podcast, I should have thought maybe about a pseudonym or but I just ran away from that world so fast. You're right. You're really, really impelled to flee from, you know, everything that you thought was normal.
Well, you know, I think what holds a lot of people back from this too, and this, I think a lot of people are susceptible to this, is they're worried about what everyone else is going to think. You know, if they take this direction, I can just tell you right now, if you go in this direction of your own business, whether it be the kind of business I do or if it's podcast, whatever it is you're doing, you are not going to be as liked by your friends and family as much as you are now.
And here's why
this is. It's not because they don't love you or anything like that. It's out of fear. In nature, you put a bunch of crabs in a bucket and one tries to crawl out, the others will pull it back in. They don't want them to leave. And that's how it is, because if you can make it, they all realize that, shoot, I should be able to do it. But they're too scared. They don't have the balls to do what you're trying to do. And once you go into understanding that and you just don't care and you say, look, it's more important to me to be respected than liked. And you know how that – you know, this applies to a lot of stuff. But like Jim Camp would say, who I mentioned earlier, the more respected we are, the more effective we are, the more respected we are. So if you just focus on bettering yourself, educating yourself in the ways that you know for whatever it is you want to do and becoming great at it, whatever it is, just pick something that you want to do and become great at it.
Yeah.
You become more respected. And even the people, dude, I'll tell you, Brett, it wasn't until recently that I think my mom finally realized that, you know, that she doesn't want me just to get a regular job finally. Like it's like even when I was doing really well, she's like, I wish he'd just get a real job. You know, it's like not like that anymore.
What do you think it was that made her realize that?
I think she just sees that I've just gotten to a certain point in my success in my life. Like, for example, I paid for my house with cash last December.
Yeah.
Nobody in my family has done that. And I did it within like a month, right? Like, and, you know, I'm not trying to brag or anything. I'm just saying, like, I do stuff like that and she can't deny it. You know what I mean? While she's probably struggling with stuff and the rest of the family's always struggling, they're always nickel and diming. I mean, I came from a very scarcity mindset household,
yeah,
where, you know, it was hand-me-down clothes and watch every penny. And I grew up like that. And I still think that's a smart way to go. I think frugality is good, actually. But you can't let it consume you to the point where you don't take any chances and try to go after the things you want, because you get one life. Do you really want to just – you don't want regrets. I'm telling you, you just, it's the worst thing. I regret waiting so long to get doing this stuff. I wish I was only 23 years old right now. Somebody had told me all this stuff. I mean, I'm almost envious of your audience, actually, in some ways. They get to hear all these things. But, yeah, it's good, though, to be able to pass it down. Especially the economy is a hell of a lot worse and a lot more chaotic now than it was in, like, the 90s and everything in the early 2000s. It's way worse because, like you were saying, we were talking about before the show, all this idiotic political correctness. I mean, people with their stupid safe places. I mean, you can't even – like, it is ridiculous. This regular society is not where people like us belong. We belong – working on our stuff, pursuing our missions, because we're going to take over eventually. We can't let these safe place people take over. We just can't. We have to do it. And it's not like it's going to be hard, because these safe place – I call them safe place people. These safe place people, the, you know, these hardcore, like politically correct, can't say anything about anything because they'll be construed as this or that or the other. Those people are not – they're leaderless. They're not leaders. Nobody's going to follow them ultimately. The only reason anybody listens to them at all is because of – fear of being, you know, called out as whatever, you know, name your ist, you know.
People listen to them because they're usually shrieking. But yeah, you're right. They're just not really fit for reality.
No, they haven't been trained in it. And it's sad. But, you know, these social justice warriors are the ones I'm specifically talking about. I can't stand
college
these.
Is the perfect place for them, actually.
Yeah, they thrive there. And I think you're seeing you know, I don't know how political you want to get, but I see you see the backlash right now. Mm-hmm. The alt-right thing, it's a total backlash of this. So I don't see them as winning very much longer, like next 20 years. I don't think it'll be like that. First of all, the economy is not – I don't even think the economy as we know it's going to exist in 20 years. I don't see how it could. But, you know, we'll see. But I think people who know what they're doing, know how to sell, know how to promote themselves, know how to market themselves, and just know how to have a mindset where you're going to win, which is something, like you say, is not taught in school, we're going to be fine. I mean, I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but who's going to win, us or the – someone who needs a safe place because somebody cast their shadow on them or something. You know what right. I mean?
Hey, so. You know, there's an interesting segue there with the social justice warriors, because I think one of the reasons why they're successful is the people who would oppose them, and this is such a ever-present output of the schooling system, is people don't assert themselves. And people don't stand up for themselves. And, you know, you talked about, I mean, you're a product of the schools. You talked about struggling through multi-level marketing and being an introvert. How did you learn to assert and promote yourself? How did you come to believe that the things you had to say had value, you know, beyond what you've already said? Because there must be some kind of rigorous practice with that, right?
Kind of. You know, it all really started for me when I started mailing my list every day. And I just decided I'm going to be me, and being controversial is a way to write emails. And it's not like, oh, I'm going to try to piss people off. It's like, I have something to say that a lot of people aren't going to agree with. And that's just too bad. Here's how I think. And then I start as a principle of doing business. And this goes back to principles versus tactics. I don't want people on my list who are social justice warriors. I don't want people on my list who are crybabies. I don't want people on my list who look at buying my products as an expense instead of an investment. They have the wrong mindset. I don't want people on my list who just jump from one product to the next, become bright, shiny objects. They see a bright, shiny object, and they buy something, and they never implement the first product or whatever it is they're doing. I don't want them on my list. There's certain people I don't want. So I write in a way that's going to just repel them. I call it repulsion marketing. I don't try to attract the people I do want. I try to repel the people I don't, just by the way I do business, and I end up attracting the right people. So it just kind of happens over time. And eventually, my friend Doberman Dan Gallup, who described it this way, he had me on his podcast a couple years ago, and he's like, Ben, you know, when you rent a rental truck, like a U-Haul or something, they have what's called a governor, which prevents you from going a certain speed. Like, you can only go up to like 50 miles per hour or whatever. He goes, you really have taken off the governor. Like, you just don't have one. You will just – I mean, I'll say things that I probably shouldn't have said every now and then. But the beauty of email, the beauty of marketing and the internet, and really even social media, is that nobody remembers anything. And you can just come back the next day and you can either correct your mistake or whatever you have to do, or just move on. You know, it's not a big deal anymore.
So that being said, you did an episode of your Antipreneur podcast about authenticity, and you expressed like a little bit of frustration that you had to actually instruct people on authenticity. I think part of the problem is authenticity in this context of self-promotion. And this is something that I know I struggled with, and I know other people struggle with. It's like, well, you should be safe, or you should follow rules, or you should apply time-tested tactics, but you say none of that.
Yeah, you know, here's one way I would put it. Now, the way I'm going to say it is not need to be literally followed by anybody. I'm just right. This just the mindset. And I was on this call with my friend Dan Meredith recently, and him and I are both considered to be very authentic in the marketing world. Like, there's people who try to emulate us, not realizing that's not how you become authentic, right? Mm-hmm. And so I said, you know what you have to do if you want to be good at this stuff is you have to behave exactly like you used to behave in high school when that made people want to beat you up and stuff you in your locker. Because that's when you were you. Because you had to have been you, because if you didn't want to get stuffed in a locker and beat up, but you were obviously acting in an authentic way, which is sorely missing in the adult world today. That unique spark of creativity and personality that's really you. I'm not saying you want to annoy people or anything like that, but what I'm saying is if you were just sitting around talking to your best friend, you would talk differently than most people would talk differently doing that than they would writing to a list thinking they have to be scared and all that. No, you just talk to your list like they're your best friend. I'm not saying throw a bunch of F-bombs out there or anything like that. What I'm saying is the actual what you're saying, not how you say it, but what you say. Just be you. What would you say? And that is how you're authentic.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think in my experience, I never had a real problem injecting my personality into what was supposed to be an educational show. I didn't. I just feel like that's always, it's important to have fun with whatever you're doing while you're doing it. I didn't have a problem doing it while I was a teacher. But when I started doing this, I didn't have a really specific niche. Well, I did before I started. I said, this is going to be a show for high school kids where a teacher gets up and tells the truth about school. But then, you know, 6 months later, once the show had become fairly popular, almost all the listeners were adults. So I found myself trying to cater to this relatively diverse group of people. And that created this kind of paralysis at times. Like, and I found myself self-censoring. And I also found myself, you know, doing things not because it was what I wanted to do, but this was many years ago, but because it was what I felt like I was supposed to do, what I should do, what other people wanted me to do. And I don't know, maybe this was 3 years ago where I just said, you know, that's bullshit. I got into doing this and tried to embrace this as a career because those are things that I wanted to forget about. I used to sit there in like school meetings when I was a tutor, and I would almost bite, you know, my lip or my tongue until it bled because I was so frustrated with what I was hearing. But I had to self-censor because my job depended on it. So I wanted to be free of all of those considerations when I started, you know, doing my own educational project with my own rules. But I still found myself doing that because I didn't really have a very, very specific type of person that I was talking to.
You know, this is reminding me of something. I'm going to give a real life something that I think will help people with this worrying about what people think and all that, what you're supposed to do because you're talking to someone who isn't used to hearing what you say. For like the last month or so, I've been dating this girl, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this girl is far left wing. Okay. I did this for fun just to see. I've never dated a left wing girl. And, you know, why not? You know, now she's not Democrat, like in the sense she doesn't like Hillary or anything. She hates Trump, of course, but she's a Bernie Sanders girl, mm-hmm. right? Believes, like, she thinks global warming's going on. And I got to hear about that sometimes. You know, she has white guilt. She admits it. Oh, God, our people have done so much evil to the world. You know, this kind of stuff, right? Now, she's not one of these girls who like forces her personality on your internet. I do never censor myself. I tell her I think that's horseshit if she says something like that. Like, I literally say, like, you're going to have to – you keep telling me this horseshit about whatever. I don't buy into this horseshit. I literally call it horseshit because that's what I believe. I'm not saying she's horseshit or I'm not saying anything bad about her. But, I mean, I don't have any – I don't edit myself around her. Now, I guarantee you every other guy she's ever dated has. And in fact, she told me that I'm giving all this personal information. I won't name her or anything. She just told me the other day that one of her ex-boyfriends, the reason they broke up is because he got so angry. Because I guarantee you this guy was not like a liberal either. He finally yelled at her because he was probably self-censoring himself the whole relationship. And finally he just yelled at her about being so self-righteous or something because he'd been bottling it all up. Now, that did him no good. It does nobody any good to bottle stuff up. You got to be you. I'm not saying you got to call people stuff horseshit like I do to that girl. Okay, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I don't censor myself around her. And guess what happens? She likes me more. She it's attractive to her. And that's how people are. They're attracted to people who are not afraid to tell the truth and be themselves. Even if they disagree with you, they will respect it. And that's my whole point in that. You can't be respected if you're not authentic.
All right. I think we have potential for a whole series of podcasts there on left-wing women. And I've done it, too. The last time I was single, I would go out and have adventures, you know.
Yeah, before. Yes, exactly.
And I remember one night at dinner getting hit with it. It was a lot of Bernie stuff, a lot of why don't we have socialism stuff. It was exciting. I couldn't push through it. This person was really, really overbearing. Maybe this girl you're
seeing. See, I would love a girl like that. I would have like I would love that only because, you know, they need to hear it. Someone's got to educate them, right? It might as well be us.
Yeah, I do like that idea of being the one who speaks up and this like the person who's been getting away with just saying this because that's so true. I mean, if you think about a girl who's doing online dating or a guy, it probably goes both ways. and they're just pontificating about all of this bullshit. A lot of the people, especially like first date, second date, third date, which is a lot of, you know, that's pretty much the extent of it in this world for most people, they're just getting yes to death on this stuff. So they become almost like college professors where they're just like surrounded by people who are like, oh, yeah, that's really insightful, you know?
Yes, I told her the other day, I said, look, you sound like a left-wing blog soundbite. You know, because she did. It was just rattling. You know, here's a funny thing. Now, this is for guys listening to this. Like, this is not for girls, what I'm about to say. It's just for the guy. I hope there's a lot of guys in your audience.
It's 70-30.
Okay, good. This is perfect. So a lot of girls don't stay with guys. I know we're getting off track here, but this is important. even the left-wing girl had to agree with me on this because I do it to her all the time. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys get rejected, especially right away, because girls think they're boring, right? And I was telling her, because we were actually at this bar the other night. We were watching this caddy. I live in a town full of caddies because it's like a big golf town. It's banned in Oregon. It's like top 10 golf courses here. It's full of caddies. And they all come to the same bar on the weekends. And we were watching this guy try to talk to this girl. And we were just kind of observing. It was really fun, actually. I go, here's what he should say. And she's like, yeah, you know, here's what he's doing wrong. Poor guy, right? I didn't even know we were analyzing him. And the next day I said, you know, all that guy had to do was find something to disagree with her about, and he would be instantly exciting and entertaining. There'd be no boredom. So you do whatever you want. But this applies to email too in a lot of ways, and copywriting and direct marketing. You're never going to find – you don't want to agree with everybody. You got to put – if you really believe something, you know you're right. You got to put it out there and hope it does rattle some cages. That's the only way real change ever happens.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you know the guy was a caddy? I'm interested.
Well, they're all caddies in there, but the real. But besides that, she had met the guy before, so she was like, "Yeah, that's a caddy friend of mine." So you know,
I didn't know if he was like carrying a golf bag to show off.
No. It's just you can pretty much tell the average age in this town is like 50 years old. So those of us under 50, there's like even people, even me, people. I just had a new person clean my house the other day. She was, "Are you a caddy?" Yeah. Like, no, I don't know. But, you know, I can understand why they would think it. Like anyone under, you know, 50, they probably wonder, are you a caddy?
I gotcha. So I have one more subject that I want to get into with you, Ben. You know, when I first started trying to sit in front of the blank computer screen and write emails, I would feel like I have nothing to say. Now, that's not true. I have plenty to say. I do, you know, podcasts every week. I do bonus content almost every week. I write in a journal almost every day. I have, I use this program Evernote. I have thousands and thousands of written notes in there that are my thoughts. I have plenty to say, but there's this problem of depth. You know, I think I have this really wide knowledge base. But I'm past, I feel like in the beginning of doing the School Sucks show, we talked about what's in the title, why school sucks. I'm an expert on that. I know all the problems. I was immersed in that for 12 years. But I wanted to transition into talking about like what education really is. And I wanted to position myself not as a guru, but as somebody who's like a lead learner. And I want to go out and learn, and I want to show that to you through this show. I want to be a kind of curious conduit who connects people who might know less about a certain subject than I do to somebody who knows way more. You know, than about a certain subject. So I want to be this bridge between a high level of knowledge and a low level of knowledge, but a desire to learn and curiosity. And that's kind of been the setup for the show. But I find myself interested in a lot of things right now where I have a fairly shallow knowledge base. I know some things. I might know more about them than most people, but I still, there's that kind of self-defeating idea that I shouldn't be talking about it like I'm an authority. I call it the, you know, Sam Harris? Okay. So this is like the Sam Harris problem. Like Sam Harris is a genius neuroscientist who said, you know, a lot of interesting things about religion and Islam, but then he gets this sense that he's just kind of invincibly smart, and he decides he wants to talk about politics, right? And he kind of looks like a fool when he does it, which is interesting because he is so bright. So I get hung up a lot feeling like, okay, well, there's going to be somebody who can provide more value than me in this area, or I don't know how to write about that, or I have nothing worth saying about that. But I think about it a lot. I heard you talk in I think the show, it was one of your shows, and it was called The Power of Being Broke, about how to not just have width of knowledge, but also depth of knowledge and how to get it fast.
The problem you're describing, I'm not sure applies to what I talked about in that podcast. I'm going to give you something to think about.
Okay.
Okay. And this would be for anyone who has that, which is pretty much anyone just starting out with this, right? I mean, yeah. Like we all do that. So this is not going to sound like there's a direct correlation at first, but just bear with me. So for about the last year and a half or so, I've been studying this martial art called Wing Chun Kung Fu. Mm-hmm. If you've seen the Ip Man movies, that's what it is. It's the same thing. That's the stuff. And the first thing I learned is what's called there's a Chinese word for it. We'll just call it the form. There's actually four forms, but the first form, Su Lu Dao, they call it. And you basically go in this special stance where you're perfectly in line with gravity, and you go through a series of movements with your arms and your wrists and that sort of thing, your hands. And it doesn't really look like it's combat or anything like that. But it's teaching you, it's walking you through pretty much all the core concepts of the entire art of Wing Chun. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the first thing my Sifu told me goes, look, 80 to 90% of what your training is not going to be here with me. Because I only go see him once a week now for 2 hours of lessons once a week. Because I don't live in that time, I'm an hour and a half away. He goes, most of your training is going to come when I'm not there. I can't correct you. I can't answer your questions. He goes, but just remember this. Whenever you get stuck, the answer that is always in the form. Just go back to that form. If you're doing a drill and you can't remember how to do it, just go back to the form. It's in there. And he's right. And it's the exact same with this. If you know your market and you do a market analysis of all their pains and their problems and their desires and their nightmares and their dreams and their insecurities and their income level and what they watch TV and what scares them in the news and what excites them and you know, all this stuff and what's their love life like, and you just know them. Like they're your favorite TV character. You know everything that bothers them. You know what keeps them up at night with acid boiling up their esophagus and fear. What gives them insomnia? What do they have at Sunday insomnia about? What do they wake up thinking about? What's plaguing them? What's on their mind? What's their family life like? What's going on in their world? If you know this about, and this is where the real work comes in the entire direct marketing world, you will never run out of ideas, ever, because you just go back to that. I'll give you an example. Last year in my town, there was this really bad mole problem here. Like yards are just full of molehills for some reason. And my dad's yard had like 20 molehills in it. And he was trying everything to get rid of these things. And just nothing was working. I can tell you right now, there's nothing you could have talked about on the subject of moles that he wouldn't have been interested in reading about in an email.
Right.
You know, so because you know his problem. So it all goes back to doing a thorough market analysis of your customers. And this, I'm telling you right here, this is the whole backbone of direct marketing. Get this right. You don't have to be the best writer or best podcaster or the best anything, video, whatever you like to use. You don't have to be the best. You just have, you know what to say. And that's the most important thing.
And do you feel like a two-way communication is important? Because that was actually one of the things that inspired me to get started. And we actually created some forums for the website where we asked people questions. Is, you know, Facebook is... I was going to say Facebook is fine. I hate Facebook.
I call it Flakebook.
We have a group. We've got 1,800 people in it. So it's certainly not the whole audience, but it's people right. who are mostly passionate. And, you know, I go in there sometimes and I say, oh, you know, more Trump stuff. People want to talk about Trump. And I don't have a problem with that. I find it entertaining when people post that. But I'm finding that's not a way to get to know people. You know, I think that I would have a better chance with this less chaotic form of communication to get some responses and at least start to have a better inventory of who's out there. I mean, I have a good idea and I know some demographic numbers, but you're right. I mean, I after 7 years of doing this and feeling now more than ever that I could be doing such a better job of you know, providing things for the people who are listening to us or people who need to be listening to us and haven't found us yet for whatever reason. But I've struggled to make those connections.
Well, put it this way. Remember how I was bringing up the dating analogy about the – you might find after listening to this episode that – you may not. I don't know. I'm just guessing. I think with your audience segment and their age or anything, I think they probably identified with some of this. You might find they want more advice on that, and you can just tie what you're doing into that sort of thing. You know what I mean? Those stories are relevant to everyone. In fact, there's this this is something to think about. You ever get stuck with what to write about? This is the cure on those things. There's a sales trainer named Barry Maher, very brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. And he says whenever he's speaking, you know, giving talks and presentations about to salespeople and all that. He goes, if I find that the audience is looking bored or they're wavering, I just start bringing up sex or dating, and everybody perks up. So if nothing else, just write about dating or something like that, and people just perk up. Even married people, they just perk up because it's primal. You could talk about health. Everybody is interested in their own health. So if you can think of some way to bring health in, money isn't. Everybody's obsessed with it. They need it. You can't live without it. Even in Valenzuela, you gotta have it.
Right.
So that's something I'm saying. Like, there's core things that you can always talk about that will always be interesting. Food, money, and sex. You know, those things. I'm not saying get pornographic or anything. What I'm saying is, this, like I was talking to you about, right? It was rated PG. There's nothing like bad about it. And so that's something to think about.
Yeah, I really need to make a catch file, or I just need to stop censoring myself this way. I've had some hilarious moments, like in monologues, because most of what we do isn't live.
Yeah.
So just hilarious moments of inappropriate humor that wind up on the cutting room floor.
Outtakes,
yeah. So the way we actually support the show is we have a bonus content section, and people really love it. They can, you know, chip in 8, 12, 15 bucks a month, and they get access to hundreds of hours of additional content.
Oh, dude, you should be put those outtakes in there, man.
Exactly.
That'd
exactly.
Be awesome.
I need to keep saving them, because I'll sit there and I'll listen to something and I'll just be cackling to myself. And then I'll say, no, not appropriate. But I think you're right. And I think that there's opportunities for authenticity, because I have so many stories about those topics that I think people would find both educational and fascinating.
Yep, that's what you want to do.
Yeah,
that's exactly it.
Had like the comfort level to talk about them on the show. When you started sending emails, I mean, you know, use the F word in your email.
I rarely do that. You know, people think I do. I really don't. And if I do, I misspell it on purpose for fun. I don't, and I only say this because it seems like I have this reputation. I really like somebody even went through once and said, Ben, I used to think you were like this, but I went through like your last 10 emails and you're tame. I said, yeah, and this goes back to authenticity while we're talking about it. He goes, I think it's because so many people are doing it. And, you know, that anyone who's authentic suddenly gets lumped in with these people. Like, well, you know, I guess that's something. But I don't really swear that. If I do, there's a purpose to it. It's just to add some flavor to the moment. But anyway.
Absolutely. Let's do a little – we got 10 minutes left. Let's do a little lightning round of pieces of advice I've heard you give. And you can talk about each for a couple minutes. This might have been secondhand. You might have gotten this advice from somebody else, but I've heard you mention this a few times. Read the 10 best books 10 times instead of, you know, 100 mediocre books once.
Yeah, that goes back to your question about width versus depth.
Yeah.
And most people never have a deep knowledge of anything because they sit there and they read every book, which most books are boring and suck, and they somehow fight through it if they read it at all. And they'll go through 100 and they'll brag about their library. I've got my books. Yeah, I'm thinking, how much do you know though? When I got started out, I was so broke. I could only afford like an $8 book called The Ultimate Sales Letter. That's what got me started.
Mm-hmm.
And I read that thing 10, 15, 20 times before I made enough money to buy the next thing. I think being broke actually was an asset to me in that case. But yeah, find the 10 best resources, whether it be a book or audio training or video, whatever it is. When you know something's really good and you really like it, don't go through it again at least 10, like 9 more times. And I know it sounds boring and tedious, but I tell you, you will know that information better than the author themselves at that point.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's great advice. And it's the idea of like not spreading yourself too thin intellectually. And it's a time commitment as well. My original idea before I started doing this as a podcast was for it to be a documentary. And I thought it would be really successful. So I was just consuming anything I could about education. And while I really needed a mind map, what I had instead was just this stupid looking collage. You know, I had like all these things that contradicted each other, and it was just a mess. And I confused myself more than I helped myself. So what's the process like for you when you're trying to find, like, in any given discipline, the best resources?
Well, you know, that would depend on what somebody wants to learn. But like in the copywriting world, I specifically did not fall – like I wanted to go after old school people, the people who built the industry. They're the stuff I wanted to read, or people who were in the process of changing things radically. So I found guys like – name. I don't know if the audience will know these names or not, but like Gary Halbert and John Carlton and this guy named Gary Bensavanga. These people changed everything. I talk about Matt Fury. I went through all these guys' stuff like 10 times each. I didn't want to go after every like bright, shiny object and every new guru launch that popped up. In my industry, whenever there's a new product launch, everybody gets this this frenzy going because marketers are very good at getting people to do that. I never fell for it. In fact, I always was like, this is just stupid. This isn't right. This, like, I went depth to my training. I'd rather, I'll go back to the Wing Chun thing. I spent 2 hours once just on one, just at class there, just because I get private lessons, just on what's called the entry, literally like three movements. Just like I spent 2 hours just perfecting that. And he's like, this is how you get great at this. It's not by, he goes, I can teach you everything at once, but really you want to get down and kind of put a microscope on each little part of it. And that's how you want to approach this, whatever you're learning, whatever discipline it is, even if it has nothing to do with marketing.
I've also heard you say that it's valuable to teach the things you want to learn. You described yourself as a perpetual student, and you know, this is my idea of being the enthusiastic conduit. But what does that mean to you? I mean, and what does that practice look like, teaching what you want to learn?
Well, I think you learn things better when you teach them to somebody else.
That's true. Sure.
I mean, you would know this better than I would. So I teach it in the form of my daily emails and in the products. I could write articles saying, here's what I learned. You know, I always try to give credit where credit's due. So if you learn something from someone very specific, it's always good to do that. Give credit where it's due. There's plenty of stuff you will start coming up with on your own. This is the amazing thing. When you start learning things at a deep level, you start coming up with insights that nobody else has. And that becomes your contribution to whatever it is. And those things will happen more and more and more the deeper you get into a subject. It's the weirdest thing. The most simple stuff has the most depth. And, you know,
yeah,
that's how that works.
Isn't that true?
Yeah.
It's so often I've said, well, that's an easy thing to understand. It's real easy to convince yourself that you know everything about something when you know nothing about it.
That's very true.
And that's a big problem that people have.
Yeah. It really, ego gets in people's way.
Indeed. So, Ben, I've really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I want to give the people in my audience an opportunity to learn more about you. No, it's not your primary endeavor, but I really, really recommend listening to your podcast. I think it's awesome. And when you were first recommended to me by my friend Nathan Frazier, I said, why would I want to listen to anyone talk about that? I mean, that was pretty much what I said in my head. And I started listening to the podcast and I was just hooked. So I definitely recommend that to my audience. But how would you like new people to connect with you?
Well, my podcast, I ended up killing it in July.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
But that had nothing to do with it because I didn't like podcasting. It's because I turned it into this paid product that didn't work out. I'm going to start a new one next year. So, but that's going to be on my site at bensettle.com, which is where I would tell everyone to go anyway. Just bensettle.com. If you give me your precious email address and you opt in, I'll send you the first issue of my email players newsletter. It's a print newsletter that's $97 a month, but I'll give you the first issue as a PDF, not print, you know, by email right away. There's 24 ways in there you can start making more sales with email, whether you're selling anything now or not. I'm just saying you'll have that information. People have told me they made thousands of dollars just with that free issue. It's you just get it if you give me your email address. If you don't, you can just click through to my site and you can read, like, I don't know, there's almost 2,000 blog posts on there. You saw the media page. There's well over a dozen hours of audio on there, a couple of videos, and it's all free. So either way, just go to bensettle.com.
Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Hey, thank you. It's been fun.